ugly head. Evander's voice is jagged, like he's swallowed too much grief. He pauses with his back against an enormous tree, one hand on his sword, the other clutching the vial of human blood he sprinkles along our path to try to draw the king's spirit near. Lucky for us, the Deadlands are vast. We probably won't see a thing. I grit out in a tone that doesn't invite more questions. I hate how each word is magnified in the immense emptiness of the grove. The shade that killed Master Nicanor must have scared any nearby spirits into some deeper part of the Deadlands where we don't often travel. I've never walked this long down here without seeing a soul, and I don't like it one bit. As if sensing my thoughts, Valoria shivers against me. It has to be a really nasty shade to have gotten the better of Nicanor, Evander says after a while, putting away his vial of blood to scrub a hand over his shadowed jaw. I wonder if he's also thinking of what happened to his father, Baron Crowther, and wish I could wrap him in my arms. What gives shades their strength? The princess whispers as we push through the deepest shadows of the grove. I rub my aching temples. I wish there was some way of telling time here. But the permanently twilight sky gives away nothing. So I can't say whether the soothing potion Valoria drank is starting to wear off. For that matter, she adds thoughtfully, what do they look like? If you've never seen a shade, you're lucky. I'm not going to describe one for you. I frown as Valoria shoots me an affronted look. The shades that haunt the Deadlands dislike sunlight and usually keep to the darkest shadows, occasionally finding a spirit to devour. They're rarely bold enough to attack a necromancer. Still, they're a big part of the reason why we always work in pairs. And why we kill any dead, like King Wilding, at the first signs that they've been in their old bodies for too long. Increased aggression, snarling at their families, and generally acting strange. Lucky for the dead, the transformation from person to monster is much slower when they're shrouded, giving us necromancers time to intervene with a mercy killing and another raising. Once someone's turned into a shade, there's no reversing it. A soft humming fills the misty grove, drawing my attention back to the princess. Valoria clutches a pendant around her neck, a wooden token etched with swirling lines that make the rough shape of a face. Dear Faya, show us mercy and grant us safe passage, she mutters under her breath. Help us find the king and guide us safely home. She's praying, I realize, to the brown-eyed face of change. The only one of Vaya the five-faced god's faces, whose temples have been abandoned for over 200 years. Since King Wilding was first raised from the dead and outlawed the worship of change. No music, Evander says gently, turning back to us. Apologies, Highness, but the sound might attract more than just the king. Many spirits miss being able to laugh and sing. Get too many of them hungry at once, and we'll have to fight them off with our swords like a pack of wild dogs. As we emerge from the silver tree grove and approach the edge of the massive garden, something stirs in the shadows at the corner of my vision. I whirl around, staring hard at the spot. My heart thuds dully in my ears. And though Valoria says my name in a faraway voice, I'm too focused to answer. At first, all I can see is blackness between the trees that looks thick enough to swim in. Then I glance lower, and I spot it. The outline of a rotting arm or leg. A piece of mottled gray flesh stretching toward me through the darkness, changing the shape of the mists. The sight squeezes all the air out of my chest. Odessa? Evander grabs my shoulder. The spark of his touch breaks the spell the grisly sight cast on me, and I suck in a breath.
What is it?
I blink, and it's gone. Shades always move faster than humans, but the speed with which this one disappeared makes me feel like bolting for the nearest gate. Only my legs have turned to jelly, and there's no way I can go anywhere just now. Meeting Evander's worried gaze, I shake my head. It isn't until Valoria's back is turned that I mouth, "Shade, it's gone now." The blood drains from Evander's face, and he meets my eyes as we exchange a wordless agreement. There's no point unsettling Valoria any further by mentioning this. Still, Evander guards our backs with his blade, just in case the shade decides to return. Valoria tugs on my hand, drawing my gaze to the garden. It's empty. No spirits stand around the giant marble fountain at its center, though the elderflower wine splashes merrily over the stone as always. My heart sinks at the sight. Maybe all the spirits are gone because the giant shade devoured them, the king included. But it's such a terrible thought, I can't bring myself to voice it. "I thought you said he'd be here," the princess whispers. Her tone isn't accusing, but she shrinks against me.
"Maybe we need to spill more blood," Evander ventures, taking a few steps into the silent garden. "Fresher blood, so they can smell it from farther away."
He holds up his left arm and lays the sharp edge of his sword against his pale skin. Valoria sucks in a breath as I cry, "Don't!" Evander lowers his blade at the sound of my protest, having made only a shallow cut along his forearm. I can't stand to see a living thing in pain, least of all Evander. The nuns who raised me said I'd been that way since birth, trying to put the wings back on a trampled butterfly, tending the weakest plants in their garden. That's what made me so well-suited for walking in the Deadlands, they said. My love of life. "I'll do it," I say quickly, raising my arm and my sword. "Valoria, take my vial of honey. If you start feeling dizzy, eat as much as you need."
"Odessa, don't you dare,"
Evander growls as I grit my teeth and pull the blade across my skin. One quick slice, and I'm bleeding on the ferns and the big white lilies. Normally, the sight wouldn't bother me. But today, it makes me think of Master Nicanor's ribbons of flesh. I fight to keep breathing steadily as Evander rushes to my side, covering the wound with a scrap of his torn shirt.
"That's more than enough," he says sharply,
probably thinking we'll attract that giant shade with the mess I'm making. To my relief, the blood leaking from the shallow cut on his arm is already clotting. "Just trying to help," I gasp out as my knees buckle. I must have lost a bit too much blood. Valoria steadies me. I glance back over my shoulder and offer her a weak smile
as Evander finishes tying my bandage.
You're stronger than you look.
Valoria's lips twitch. I know.
Death be damned.
Evander draws his sword again, a motion as fluid and natural as breathing. The few times I've seen someone best Evander in a sword fight, it was because he was too sick to know which end was the pointy one.
Looks like we'll be taking the long way home tonight,
he grumbles, gazing at something behind us. A hot prickle of fear stings the back of my neck as I whirl around, remembering the glimpse of rotten gray flesh in the shadows of the grove. But the tightness in my chest dissolves. There's nothing in the darkness. In fact, there aren't any shadows at all. Instead, the silvery trees have been quietly replaced by a field of marigolds, just like the ones we crossed to get to the garden. How does an entire grove disappear like that? Valoria asks.
That's how it is here,
I shrug.
Things are always changing, moving themselves when you least expect it, just like the gates that let us in.
It's why you're lucky to be here with the Sparrow,
Evander shoots me an admiring glance.
Why, we're lucky, he amends.
Already, a slight tug around my navel tells me that despite appearances, the gate isn't so far away anymore. Since the grove shifted off to some other part of the Deadlands, more of the landscape has moved too, and we're suddenly much closer to an exit. There's a gate at the back of the garden now, I say, looking out across its wide expanse. There are dozens of fountains, bridges, and pathways to walk before we reach the new gate. But we have to find the king first.
In that case, ladies?
Evander puts on a smile, but it wavers.
Fancy a nighttime stroll through this beautiful garden?
We wind our way slowly past the fountain, pacing ourselves so Evander and I can gaze around tall statues and flowers in search of the king. The marble fountain and even some of the plants give off a muted glow that serves as our only source of light. And it's a good thing, as no man-made lantern works down here.
King Wilding,
I call softly, pointlessly.
Majesty?
I don't say it, not wanting to alarm Valoria, but I've never spilled that much of my own blood and not had at least a dozen spirits come out to fight over who gets to lap it up.
This is beyond incredible.
Valoria plucks a stem of purple flowers and brings it to her nose. Lavender, a symbol of serenity. The language of flowers is the same in this world as in ours. The only way the spirits can communicate with the living from here.
Strange. It doesn't smell like anything,
Valoria says, blinking at the lavender. I tug on her hand, pulling her forward before she can spot the luscious-looking plums and apples hanging from the nearest tree. My injured arm throbs in response.
Someday, I'm going to figure it all out, you know.
Valoria's eyes are bright and shining as she tucks the lavender stem in her hair.
The science behind our magic.
I arch my brows. I don't think King Wilding would appreciate that kind of talk.
But I do. I've been studying the correlation between eye color and different forms of magic, like how everyone with blue-eyed sight sees gateways to the Deadlands and can learn to raise the dead.
Valoria peers thoughtfully through the wooden slats of the bridge beneath our feet as we march over a small stream.
Someday, I'm going to unlock the way magic works. And then I'll be able to explain all sorts of things. Don't you want to know why the dead come back with their sight, but not their magic when you raise them? I wince, pausing just after the bridge and sheathing my sword. I don't want to answer any more questions. I just want to think about Nicanor as I remember him in life, uninterrupted, so he can stay real to me, not like that bloody mess on the ground. As the princess stops beside me, I take both her hands in mine. There's nothing to study or understand or explain. It just is. It's not science. Our sight is Vaya's gift to us. The sooner you accept that, the sooner you can start enjoying life. But I do enjoy it, Valoria frowns. Learning is what makes things fun.
Hey, you two, hurry up!
Evander waves us over from beside a neat line of hedges, the garden border.
Look who I found,
Evander says as we approach, the calm in his voice straining. On the dark horizon is the reassuring blue glow of a gate, the way home. But Evander points down, just on the other side of the hedge. Following his gaze, I lean over the prickly bushes. The sight that greets me makes me feel sick all over again, remembering the fear in Master Nicanor's remaining eye. And not just because it's surely an old pool of Nicanor's blood staining the ground beyond the hedge. What chills me to the core is the way King Wilding's filmy spirit kneels beside the pool, scooping up tacky blood and smearing gobs of it into and around his mouth. Keep holding my hand and grab on to his majesty with your other one, I tell Valoria in what I hope is a soothing voice. When she blanches and shakes her head, I give her a nudge with my shoulder. You're his connection to the world. No one else can do it. That's why you're here. But she remains frozen in fear. You only have to hold him until we're through the gate. Then he'll wake up where we left him, safe in his shroud.
Odessa's right, Evander frowns at the bloody grass. Unless, Highness, you'd rather stay down here with whatever did that.
Valoria groans and shakily climbs over the hedge, holding tight to my hand. The king looks up, unable to utter a sound in his spirit form. Free of his shroud in this world, he's a translucent version of himself in life. Still a great bear of a man with arms built for chopping trees, but no longer darkly tanned and raven-haired like he is in many of the portraits decorating the palace walls. Now his skin and shoulder-length hair are as pale and fine as gossamer. Perhaps some would find him handsome, if he weren't lapping up blood and sporting the sword wound in his chest from when I killed him earlier. Disgusting a sight as he is, I'm struck by a sudden rush of appreciation for King Wilding. He may be terrifying sometimes, and hand out threats freely, but most days, I'm proud to be his necromancer. He can be as kind as he is harsh. He tries his hardest to prevent things from changing. And he loves Carthia enough to endure so many slayings and raisings, always returning ready to be our guardian. No one knows the hearts and minds of Carthians better than him after all these years. And I doubt anyone loves us as fiercely. Master Nicanor's death will hit him hard when he learns of it. Summoning her strength, Valoria finally reaches out a hand. The king's red lips form a gentle smile as the princess grabs hold of his wispy arm and pulls him toward the gate.
Chapter 4 Midnight has come and gone by the time we sit down for supper at Evander's house. The leftover rooster pie is mercifully warm, thanks to Baroness Crowther's servants keeping it on the stove. Someone's opened most of the downstairs windows, and a cool sea breeze tickles our ankles as we take our seats in the larger of the two dining rooms. The Baroness herself joins us, sliding into her customary spot at one end of the long table. As usual, she avoids looking too long at Baron Crowther's seat that will be forever empty. I lift my fork, waiting to see if the Baroness will say a prayer. But there's not much point since Evander's already tucking in noisily beside me. Eat, the Baroness encourages, smiling softly in a way that makes her pale blue eyes crinkle at the corners. She pushes a basket of sliced fig and gingerbread toward me, like nothing's changed since I saw her last. Like it's no big deal that she failed to turn up for our title ceremony last week.
You look exhausted, Sparrow.
When I was younger, I used to think Lyda Crowther should have been born a duke's daughter, not a lowly miller's. Especially on nights like tonight, when the gems she's pinned in her light brown hair sparkle like they're trying to outshine her. But of course, they can't. She's that beautiful. At least on the outside. I would have said inside once, back when I first became Evander's partner and she invited me here for every meal, offered me a bed, and fussed over me like a mother. Back when I didn't understand that she only kept me close because she hoped she could mold me into someone other than the necromancer I was born to be. And perhaps because she saw how Evander and I shared every confidence. She hoped she could change his mind through changing me. But last week's ceremony marked the day she finally gave up. Lyda's voice, thick with concern, cuts into my thoughts once again.
Whatever's upset you and Evander this evening, I can't help but feel it's at least partly my fault.
I've never really felt at home here, in the stiff, high-backed chairs that decorate the Crowther's imposing manner. But Lyda has always encouraged me to call it home. And I guess I should call it that, since it's where I sleep most nights after fooling around with Evander, in a spare room where all my belongings fit in one dresser drawer. If I'd just done a better job at talking you two out of studying death's magic. I haven't slept all week. I've been so worried. Lyda wrings her hands in her lap, faint lines creasing her forehead as we all continue to eat our fill of a meal I can barely taste. After several long moments, a pretty serving girl arrives to collect our plates. I wink at her as she takes up mine, then shift my attention to Evander.
Speaking of death, he says hesitantly, as if he can't bear to relive the night's events. I'm glad you're sitting down for this, Mother.
He takes my hand under the table. After a practiced, hasty glance over his shoulder to make sure no servants are watching from the shadowed halls. He sounds older than his 19 years, as he declares.
We were delayed tonight because Master Nicanor was murdered. It looked like he was torn apart by some wild animal. But it was a shade. I saw it, just for a moment.
Lyda's hand flutters at her throat. All the nobles and necromancers know each other at least in passing, and Lyda knew Master Nicanor better than most. He's the one who stepped in to help when Baron Crowther himself became a shade many years ago. He's also the one who offered to train Lyda as a necromancer when she was a girl. according to Evander. But Lyda was never interested.
Yana!
The Baroness rises, crossing the room to ring a silver bell as she calls for one of her maids.
Bring some cold water, please. And hurry. I'm so distressed.
She sets the bell down and turns back to us. Our gazes lock for the briefest moment. Her eyes are perfectly dry, and her smooth face is expressionless. Whatever grief she's feeling, she buried it in a hurry. Maybe she's always blamed Nicanor for not reaching her manor in time to spare her from what she had to do to her husband. But it's hard to feel too sorry for her just now. This is yet another example of what I've been trying to tell you both all these years, she says slowly, in her soft, disarming way. Without anyone to raise the dead, there would be no shades. Her face is sorrowful again as she focuses on her son. No shades, and far fewer senseless tragedies. I'm suddenly reminded of the time I overheard her telling Evander that if she could, she'd pay someone to change her eye color from blue to anything else. A dangerous thing to discuss, change, even if it's in whispers in one's own home. If there's one thing I wish you'd learned from your father's death, Lyda continues, blossoms of color appearing on her cheeks. It's that if we love the dead, we should leave them in their own world, where they belong. The summoned maid, Yana, arrives with a pitcher of cold water and has to stifle a gasp at her mistress's words. Evander clenches his jaw. All I learned from father's death is that the dead need gifted necromancers to keep them and everyone else safe. His voice rises, and the maid scurries from the room. Father wanted to be raised. He was there to see me grow up thanks to necromancers. I doubt I'd remember him otherwise. Lyda opens her mouth, but Evander keeps talking, building steam. If there were no necromancers, what would become of the dead already here? Would you have them all slain just to return them to the Deadlands? Would anyone ever deserve that? Wincing, Lyda covers her face with her hands. A moment later, a whisper of her usual voice issues from between her fingers. Of course not. What a horrible thing to say. If we love the dead, we should honor their wishes and protect them, same as the living. And that's the last I'll hear of it. Evander leans back in his seat, breathing hard. When they both glance in my direction, I spot a crumb of bread on the table and pop it in my mouth to avoid speaking my mind. Because I actually think they both have a point. The dead do pose a threat. I've seen the danger, just today, in the shade that tore Master Nicanor to pieces. But the dead need me far more than the living, and I, them. Without dead to raise, I'd be nothing but an orphan. As long as the dead are around, I'm their sparrow, and I won't give that up for anything, not even for Lyda's blessing to marry Evander. We should pay for Master Nicanor's funeral, Lyda says timidly a moment later, her cheeks still ruddy with color. He was a dear family friend after all. It's a peace offering. And Evander, seeming too tired to argue anymore, seizes it. He nods, and they start discussing plans. I try to listen, but my attention keeps wandering to Baron Crowther's empty chair at the far end of the table.
No one's ever told me the whole story. Not even Evander. But from what I've gathered, the Baron died of a plague when Evander was small, and a necromancer brought him back. Then Lyda got a glimpse of him beneath his shroud, a terrible accident, and he became a shade. He tried to kill Evander's little sister and broke Evander's arm when he stepped in to save her. Lyda killed the monster she'd once loved so dearly, setting it ablaze just before Master Nicanor and his apprentice arrived at the manor. There's still a scorch mark in the smaller dining room. No one goes in there, but I peeked once. The story's true.
Odessa? Evander frowns like he knows I wasn't listening.
I fake a yawn, stalling for time as I try to figure out a vague answer to whatever question I missed. But I'm saved from answering it all by a rustling of skirts coming down the hallway, followed by the clicking of claws on the wooden floor. The eldest of Evander's two siblings, Elabeth, appears in the doorway. Three of her greyhounds, blinking their liquid amber eyes, poke their heads into the room by pushing past their owner's billowing skirts.
"We've been sent a raven,"
Elabeth announces, casting a quick smile my way. I like everything about the future Baroness, who as eldest will inherit the manor. From her sparkling green eyes, to the claw scars all over her hands and arms, to her bobbed, feathery brown hair. And I absolutely adore the pack of long-legged, skinny hounds that follow her everywhere. Like a matched set, all have white fur with large blue patches. But I know she has several other dogs here in the manor. I'd expect no less from a beast mage who maintains the royal family's fox hunting kennels for a living. Elabeth unfurls a piece of parchment, clears her throat, and reads,
"Evander and Odessa, if you're there. We must discuss what happened tonight. Get some rest, and meet me at the graveyard behind Noble Park tomorrow before noon."
She sets the parchment on the dining table and adds, though we already know who it's from,
"Signed, Master Simbri."
Simbri and Nicanor retired as of last week, having seen our training through to the end. But Simbri seems to want to keep guiding us, even now that we've come of age.
"She probably wants us to help her hunt down the shade that did this,"
Evander mutters, picking up the parchment and crumpling it in his fist. Elabeth's delicate brows shoot upward, and she grips the back of her mother's chair.
"The shade that did what?"
One of her greyhounds whines softly, as sensitive to her mistress's every shift in mood as Elabeth is to theirs. Another curls up on my feet under the table. I take comfort in the rhythm of its beating heart and the warmth of its fur as Evander sighs and repeats the night's events for his eldest sister. Once Lyda and Elabeth and her many hounds are fast asleep, I join Evander on the back end of the manor's roof. It's a quick climb from the balcony off Evander's bedroom to the rooftop, and the chairs he keeps out there are the perfect boost for getting onto the shingles. We can make it to the top in near silence thanks to years of practice. I don't even flinch when the bandage on my aching arm snags on a patch of roof. Evander quickly helps me free it with a gentleness that's surprising from such strong, rough hands. I can always count on him to untangle me. Once we're seated, we dangle our legs and kick at the brisk night air, thick with the familiar, comforting scents of bergamot and lemons, the restless sea at our backs. Around us, the stately homes of Noble Park are bathed in moonlight, all trying to outshine one another with the grandest balconies and the prettiest rose gardens. I never tire of the splendid houses, at least not at night, when their occupants are how I like them best, asleep.
I don't know how I'm going to get any rest at all tonight.
Evander takes my hand in his, rubbing his thumb over my palm.
I can't stop thinking about it, Sparrow. Every time I close my eyes, I see him. What was left of him.
I hate the roughness in his voice. Those tiny cracks of fear and hurt. I hate the monster that took Master Nicanor and burned the horrible image of his final moments into both our minds. We'll fix this, Van. We'll get revenge when we kill the Shade.
I'm reminded of the flash of the bony, rotting figure I saw in the Deadlands Grove.
Of how fast it moved. Faster than the other shades we've glimpsed in the past. Of how hard we'll have to train if we want to fight it. But Evander doesn't need anything else troubling his thoughts tonight. I wrap my arms around him, and for a long time, we just breathe. It isn't until the sky lightens to a pearly gray that Evander lays a hand on my back and clears his throat.
I'm sending a raven to Casimira after breakfast. As soon as we find and kill this shade, we're booking passage out of here on the Paradise.
I draw back to give him a sharp look, suddenly alert despite my lack of sleep. He knows as well as I do that it's illegal for any Carthian to sail away from our rocky shores. Of course, that doesn't stop people like Casimira and her smugglers from exploring under cover of darkness when they should be running routine supply ships up and down the coast. But if the king somehow got wind of our escape attempt before we set sail, he wouldn't hesitate to bind me in chains for the rest of my life, just to keep me, his most prized necromancer, at his side. And when I think of it that way, leaving never seems worth the risk, even though staying means having to sneak around Evander's overbearing mother. We've talked about this before, Van, I say at last. First of all, we have a home here, and now a job that brings the kind of riches most people only dream about. Evander grins undaunted.
So we'll build a new house and raise the dead somewhere different. People are always dying, and the gates into the Deadlands are always moving. Mages with our talent must be needed elsewhere, too.
He lowers his gaze to my now empty right pocket, where my coffee beans are usually hidden.
Casimira and her crew get your treats from someplace outside Carthia. Another island.
That's what she says. I shake my head, unable to hold back a slight smile as I think of her. But people who trust Casimira's word tend to wind up broke, lost, or dead.
My point is, if she's telling the truth, we already know of one island where we could settle after exploring,
Evander presses, his eyes gleaming as he pictures it.
Imagine a shore full of coffee beans. And best of all, a place where we can marry.
I start to say something, but Evander beats me to it, taking both my hands in his.
Just think about it. There's nothing for us here. We can't get married without my mother's blessing, and Elibeth will inherit the manor and title besides. All I'll inherit, all I've ever been given, are my father's dreams.
I never met Baron Crowther, but he lives on through Evander's stories.
He used to captain his brother's trading ship after his brother was crippled in an accident. And once, when he got knocked off course during a storm, he swore he saw a strange island. He became a shade before he ever got a chance to retrace his path, to learn what was out there.
The island, you mean? I tentatively ask.
Exactly. We can find it for him. Together.
Evander presses a kiss to my cheek.
That is, if you'll still come with me.
I shake my head to clear the cobwebs of exhaustion.
You'd go without me?
Evander loosens his grip, drawing back to look at me with shining eyes.
I didn't mean I'd just take off.
Save it, Van, I snap, trying to cover my hurt with anger.
You meant what you said.
He tries to grab my hand, but I pull away too quickly.
Don't you want to see what's beyond our walls and our harbors without being afraid of losing our jobs? Or swinging from the hangman's noose?
His voice strains with the effort of keeping it steady.
Don't you want to get married?
I do. The words stick in my throat along with the tears I'm holding back. Even if our leaving went unnoticed until we were far from shore,
I wouldn't know who I am if I'm not the Sparrow. I'm afraid I'd just be some girl on a boat.
But keeping Evander in Carthia, when he's dreamed forever of mapping out rivers and lakes and sleeping under new skies, seems almost cruel. Even if I need him here. Even if the one dream I've never told anyone, of finally having a family of my own, would die the moment he left. After a while, Evander says softly,
tell me what you want most.
What I want is an end to these arguments. They only wind up hurting us both, never solving anything. Because I never meant to fall for someone so in love with the unknown that it would threaten to take me away from the things that make me the Sparrow and the job it took 7 years to learn. I doubt he meant to fall for me either. But now I'm caught up in his dreams of maps and distant shores, complicating everything. Maybe I don't know what I want anymore. I push a lock of hair out of my face with a shaking hand. With Nicanor's death fresh in my mind, a vivid reminder that we necromancers only get one chance at life, every little decision feels like an anchor holding me underwater. This life is all we get, Van. There's no room for mistakes. No second chances. No do-overs. I just want to make sure we consider all the consequences before rushing off.
Evander grips my shoulders like I'm scaring him. The realization makes anger flare in my chest, because without it, I'd be scared too. And there's no room for fear in Carthia. Not with the dead among us, and with the possibility of a shade being created at any moment.
I know what I want. To be with you. Really be with you. Out in the open.
Evander's voice deepens with longing.
That's why we have to go.
I say the same thing I always do when he brings up leaving. If it's me you want, then tell Lyda we're in love and demand her blessing. She'll come around eventually. We don't have to go anywhere to really be together.
If she knew we were in love, she'd never let you stay here again. She'll never let me marry a necromancer.
She doesn't want you to be a necromancer, I correct, clenching my hands at my sides. or me. It scares her. Because of your father.
But we can go live at the palace, whether we're married or not. We have rooms there,
thanks to His Majesty.
It would mean no more sneaking, even if your mother never accepts what's been in front of her for years.
That'll crush her, and you know it. She'll have no one then, with Merity studying so far away, and Elabeth working all the time.
He lowers his gaze.
We may not agree on, well, anything. But she's the only parent I've got. I can't hurt her like that.
If you think moving to the palace would hurt her, how do you think it'll be when you vanish completely?
My voice comes out sharper than I intended.
You want to leave, Carthia. That's what you really want. Stop pretending leaving is all about being with me.
Stung, Evander drops his hands from my shoulders.
You're right. About everything.
He takes a deep breath.
Leaving will destroy her. But at least I won't have to see her face.
Coward. I wince. Partly at the hurt on his face. And partly because I'm ashamed to admit I'm glad I said it.
I could say the same of you.
Evander leans close, breathing fast.
Even if you won't admit it, you're just like everyone else. Scared of what's out there.
He sweeps his arm toward the sea.
Scared of change.
If that's what you think, then you don't know me at all.
I leap to my feet.
Odessa!
Dodging his outstretched hand, I slide down the roof, taking care not to make a sound in case Lyda or Elabeth are sleeping restlessly. The patter of Evander's hurried steps pursues me as I dash toward the guest room where I stay. 7 years, and I'll always be a guest. I change course at the last minute, ducking into Merity's room 2 doors away instead. I sink onto the edge of her bed as I struggle to get control of my breathing, coming in ragged gasps. The faint scent of the clean, sparse room always calms my nerves, though I can't explain why. It's a mixture of cedar chips, vanilla, and something I can't name. All I know is it helps me clear my mind. I don't want to think right now about Evander, Nicanor, or sailing ships, or anything else. I haven't seen Evander's younger sister, Merity, since she was 10, starting her mage training a year after Evander and I began ours. She'd be 16 now, training to be a beastmaster like her sister. Burying my damp face in Merity's quilt, I wonder if she's freezing to death in one of the northernmost provinces, Lorness or Osley. Learning to understand and control the seals and winter white foxes. Or maybe she's down in Dargany province, riding on a camel's back. I've only ever seen camels in paintings, but I wouldn't mind going somewhere like Dargany to experience new things. No matter what Evander thinks, I'm not scared of change, even if I don't always like it. I'm scared of going someplace where I might not be the sparrow, of not knowing who or what I'd be then. Yet I wonder if some small part of me is afraid, too, that Evander is right about leaving. We only get one chance at life. What if staying isn't keeping us safe, but holding us back? I wonder if I'd ever be brave enough to admit that aloud, much less to him. After a while, I fall asleep, and images blur together in my dreams. A bloodied Master Nicanor staggering through the icy tundra.
Chapter 5. The last person I want to see this morning is Kasmira. But after waking with my face buried in Merity's quilt to find two of the Crowther maids gawking at me from the doorway, I remember I gave the last of my coffee beans to Princess Valoria yesterday. So I don't have much of a choice. I throw on a clean shirt, breeze down the stairs without looking to see if Evander is watching me from the parlor, and manage to dash outside before Elabeth's hounds cover me in drool. There's not a cloud in the blazing blue sky this morning. Yet there's a bite to the wind that says it will soon be time for the festival of the face of cloud, signaling the start of autumn. My stomach growls as I hurry through the wide, cobbled lanes of Noble Park. Servants airing out their master's linens on sun-drenched balconies wave, bow, or curtsy as I pass. I wave back half-heartedly, unable to fully appreciate their enthusiastic greetings, with Evander's heated words from last night still echoing in my mind. The stricken look on his face when I fled the rooftop makes me wonder if I should apologize. But an apology won't change the fact that we're at an impasse when it comes to our future. I pass a market on a lower hill where most of the royal family's errand boys and girls do the shopping for the palace kitchens. The smells of saffron and sage make my stomach groan again, and I quicken my pace. Hopefully, Kasmira has something edible on board the paradise besides stale bread. The way to the harbor takes me past warm yellow and pink stone buildings, their fronts wrapped with flowering vines, where shopkeepers live and work. Farther on, I pass a boarded-up temple for the face of change, its once proud columns cracked and sagging. Someone has drawn change's likeness in black ink on one of the building's vine-choked sides. It must be freshly done, as vandalism of this sort is promptly painted over or scrubbed away at the king's behest. The image reminds me of Valoria's necklace, and I wonder how she's holding up since her trip to the Deadlands. Next, I pass the convent for the blue-eyed Face of Death, a cheerful white building with a sapphire-hued domed roof, flanked on either side by an ancient, hunched cypress tree. Within its generous courtyard is a sprawling garden, larger than the convent itself, where a few of the sapphire-robed sisters pick rosemary and prune their potted shrubs. It's also where I grew up. If I wasn't in a hurry to get my coffee before I have to meet Master Simbri, I'd stop in for one of the sisters' famed fig and raspberry tarts. I pull up the hood of my cloak to take a shortcut through the ashes. The cramped, tumble-down houses are where the city's poor reside. Those too sick or weak to go work on one of the farms outside Grenwere City. And those too addicted to their favorite potions to do anything but sit on the filthy street and beg for coins. No matter how many charities King Wilding organizes for the poor, this place never seems to get any richer.
Blessed day to you,
a little girl's voice says as I step into the shadows of the battered homes. I push back my hood enough to see her, and try not to cringe as my lungs fill with air that reeks of spilled ale, sweat, and rotten meat. The raven-haired, copper-skinned girl can't be more than 6. She sucks her thumb as she watches me from her crumbling front step. There's a doll tucked under her arm, an ugly thing as big as her head, made of cloth scraps and bits of colorful thread. Judging by the doll's long curly hair and pink robes, it must be a woman. How long has your mother or sister been gone, sweetheart? I ask, nodding to the doll. She pulls her thumb out of her mouth long enough to say,
My mom, last spring, she had the black fever.
The black fever. A sickness so foul, even the healers can't cure it without killing themselves. It's been ravaging the people of the Ashes for years.
And where's your father? Scrubbing boats?
The girl pops her thumb back into her mouth and looks in the direction of the harbor. Though tall, old houses block it from view. As she returns her gaze to me, her brown eyes widen as if seeing me for the first time.
Your clothes, she says slowly. You're a mage, aren't you? The kind that brings people back to life?
She grins. All this girl will ever have of her mother is that doll. Sloppily made by some friend or relative to look like the loved one she's lost. I'll bet every child in these rickety houses has at least one doll like that. A poor substitute for what they dream about, but will never be able to afford. A raising by a necromancer. My services.
Take care of yourself, all right?
I say. But the girl doesn't seem to hear. She's busy crooning a lullaby to her doll.
May he reign eternal,
she says moments later. A farewell so faint I almost miss it. The people of the Ashes adore King Wilding for never forgetting them. For not looking past them the way merchants and many nobles do. He comes down here sometimes to serve them soup and bread. But I think they'd be a lot better off if he served them gold from his coffers or gave them jobs. Of course, that would be a change. So instead, he'll keep doing what he's done decade after decade, wondering and worrying why his subjects are still suffering. May he reign eternal, I echo hollowly. Pulling up my hood, I practically fly to the harbor, where the sun in my hair, the stench of fresh-caught fish, and the green and yellow banners of the paradise snapping in the breeze push the little girl from my thoughts. The worn dock creaks under my weight as I tread the familiar path to where the paradise is anchored. There are crates stacked all over the ship's main deck. Barrels of elderflower wine from Ethria province. Tart green apples from Adia province. Bananas from Indrani province, the islands that make up Carthia's southernmost point. But the good stuff is down below, behind a false wall in the back of the cargo hold. Coffee beans. A bitter thing called cacao. Spices with delicious names like cardamom and anise. I'm about to jump on board when a tangle of salt-crusted raven hair catches my eye, gleaming blue-black in the morning light as Kasmira bends to inspect a crate. Her cool brown skin is several shades darker than mine, and knowing she's from Idrani's largest island makes me think one of my parents must have been from Idrani too.
Well, well, she drawls, turning to face me with a gleam in her deep gray eyes. Someone must be needing another fix, she grins, her teeth bright white against her skin, and beckons me closer. You're in luck. I haven't eaten them all myself yet.
Good, I'm desperate. I hurry onto the ship and join her by a stack of crates. After the night I had, I'd do anything to get my hands on some. She arches one perfect brow.
Anything?
She draws the word out, giving me an appraising look that makes heat rush to my face. I wouldn't be opposed to the idea of kissing her, except that my heart chose Evander long before I even realized it.
And since Kasmira is the only one who can take Evander out of Carthia, she's partly to blame for last night's stupid fight.